Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this next segment of our show, we'll hear from Barry Slowenwhite from Compassion Canada. He'll be telling us a little bit about international poverty issues as they relate to disability. Tell me a little bit about how issues like poverty can impact someone's medical access or impact the disability.
Well, poverty impacts any kind of medical access in a very huge and negative way. Sadly, people in dire situations have little or no access to medical systems. If they do have access, they probably don't have the means to follow through with either medications or assistive devices, things like that. So it's a huge problem around the world.
So can you tell me a little bit about Compassion's work to sort of alleviate this?
Yeah, Compassion works in 26 countries, developing world countries. As of today, we're working with just under 2 million children. These children come from what we would call abject poverty situations. So that is families making less than $2 a day. And we target the poorest of the poor. And we create a program in local churches in the developing world communities where we set up what we call a compassion development center. And it's usually an after-school program and weekend program where children can receive assistance with their education. They can receive medical care. They'll receive nutrition, social skills, things like that. So it's aimed at those that are most vulnerable and most desperate.
So in terms of children who have disabilities in these countries, how do you go about dispelling the myths surrounding disability being a curse or a means by which to beg, etc.?
Wow, yeah, you've hit on a real hot item. I've been doing this work for 34 years, so I've traveled over 60 countries, and I have seen more than my share of abuse of people with disabilities, especially children. So you have situations where children are legitimately disabled. Either they're born that way or through an accident. But then you have adults who disable children, so they harm them so that they can use them on the street corners to beg. And that one really, really boils my blood. I'll tell you, I have a hard time handling that emotionally. So what Compassion does is, because we work through the local church, and we work through the local church mainly because it's usually the most viable option we have in any village or town or area, because governments in most developing world countries don't have much, if any, of an infrastructure to care for the poor. So a child with disabilities is welcomed into the Compassion Church Project or Center, and they are treated as best that we can. They are treated like every other child, in that we try not to ostracize them. We try to be very, very inclusive. But what happens at the local Compassion Child Development Center is that when we identify a child that has a disability, we then begin a process to help address them individually. So all of our educational centers, all of our programs are set up so that they are accessible for physical disabilities. We work hard with our church partners to ensure that every child has access to the program. And we also provide medical educational care for the disabled children, like we would anyone else. But in addition to that, we often provide assistive devices, everything from hearing aids to walking devices to well, anything you could name. The problem we have is they're not always easily available in these countries, so we have to be very creative in resourcing them.
So, in your time doing this work, supporting these children with disabilities, has there been any success moment that stands out for you?
Oh my goodness, yes. I'm just scanning my memory here to try and figure out which one to stop at, because there's so many. So one little girl that I met in Ethiopia, she was born blind. And the tendency for the families there, especially the families that are really poor and uneducated, would be just to keep them in their house or in their little hut, whatever, and not even allow them to go outside. And she was treated like that. She was treated almost like a prisoner, this little child, little girl. One of our compassion workers came across the family, and we're actually doing a kind of a census throughout the village to see which children were in need. And the parents brought out their other children to meet our worker, but did not bring out this little girl. And in the context of the conversation, our compassion worker discovered that there was another child, so requested to meet that child, and the parents were quite hesitant to do that, but eventually the child was brought out. The child was in terrible physical shape, hadn't been looked after, was obviously malnourished, hadn't been properly bathed and cleaned, unlike the rest of the children. And immediately our worker recognized that's where she needs to zero in on. So that child was registered at our program. So fast forward, when I met her years later, she was a young teenager. And she was vivacious. She was creative, extremely creative in her abilities and her personality. And she'd learned how to read Braille. She'd learned how to do things with her hands. She was very gifted in technology. She had learned how to navigate all the alleyways in her slum to get from one place to another and to get to the Compassion program. And when I asked her, what is your hope? What is your dreams for the future when you become an adult? Her face just lit up, and she said, my dream is to open a school for blind children. And I look at her, and I my mind cringes to think what would have happened to her if she had not been engaged at a compassion program and been known, loved, and protected, and the potential kind of unlocked. It was really interesting, too, Cam, to see the response of her parents, who earlier locked her up, kept her out of sight, was embarrassed, ashamed of her. Now, she was almost treated like their prized child. They were so proud of her that they actually kind of moved her out to the front of the line, if you will, from the other children. It was really encouraging to see.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Alrighty.
It's hard for many of us to imagine a family even getting by on $2 a day. But the fact of the matter is, a lot of them are coming at it from places of just lack of awareness. It's not that they don't care for these children and their families with disabilities. It's just that they don't know that they can have a better life, better potential, that they can and should be allowed to succeed and to achieve anything. This was a remarkable story to me, folks, in so much as we have to remember that we have all these systems and supports in place, but it's not like that everywhere, and disability really is a universal issue. But honestly, it's not a matter of overshadowing somebody else's ideals or their belief system. It's a matter of saying, we know that any person, whether they have a disability or not, can make a difference in this world. And we want to give them the opportunity to do that. And sometimes, yes, it does require creative thinking. And yeah, you have to just keep pressing at it until you come up with an answer. But it is never a wasted effort. No matter where a person is or what type of disability they may have, they have the right to live, grow, learn, and prosper. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Windsor Optimist Youth Band presents Trivia Night 2017. Saturday, November 4th, bring your team that can be up to 10 people to come and join Trivia Night. $20 per person, which includes dinner. Doors open at 6 p.m., dinner served at 6:30 p.m., and trivia games begin at 7:15 p.m. Reserve tickets no later than October 25th. Located at Royal Canadian Legion Branch, 594 on 5030 Howard Avenue. For further details, please call 519-966-9350 or email information at woya.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard stories of poverty and disability from Barry Slowenwhite from Compassion Canada. In this next segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Steve Sullivan from Mothers Against Drunk Driving. So tell me a little bit about some of the disabilities that can be caused as a result of impaired driving.
Well, we work with really anyone who's been impacted by impaired driving. So I think people most think of us as an organization that supports those who've lost a loved one. But we also support those who've been injured. And that can range from, you know, minor injuries that heal to lingering issues, but that don't affect someone's mobility, right up to someone we've had folks we've helped who've lost a limb or who now live with the use of a wheelchair. So the range of injuries that folks can experience is quite large. Sometimes we can see those injuries because they're physical. Other times we have folks who have brain injuries. So we support a whole range of people, and often the people who come to us are the caregivers because they're looking for some guidance as well.
So can you give me an overview of some of the specific support systems you use?
A lot of our services, because we're a national organization and we have chapters in as many of the jurisdictions across Canada, certainly the big cities, but even many of the smaller areas, we have local chapters who are all volunteer based. And in those chapters, we will try to train, we call them victim service volunteers. So they'll provide emotional support to either an injured person and or their family. If that person is going through the criminal justice system because there's been charges laid, we can provide support there, go to court, help with victim impact statements. We don't provide legal advice, but we can certainly help people access legal advice if they need that, information about insurance. And probably one of the most important things we do is every April we hold a national conference where we bring people who've lost loved ones and people who've been injured together. And we do workshops on healing and anger and grief and recovery. And it gives people a chance to spend time with other people who've experienced similar trauma that they have, and they can build networks and build bonds.
So are there any challenges in providing these services?
I think one of our biggest challenges is that we're not very well known for working with people who've been injured in impaired driving crashes, because people think that we really focus on preventative measures. You know, when they've seen our ads on television, they hear about our lobbying efforts with government to bring in better road safety laws. People don't, A, recognize that we provide services to people who've been injured, but also if they think we do services, they think we're geared towards death. So our biggest challenge is really getting word out that we do want to help, and that's a challenge. And then often, you know, when people are certainly soon after a crash, not really thinking about us, so it's our biggest challenge is connecting with them, letting them know we're here to provide support, any support that we can, at any time they need it. So if it's soon after a crash or it's 2 years after a crash. So I think our biggest challenge is just getting the word out. And that's something we've been working on for the last couple of years.
So to look at the converse side of things, in your time with the organization, has there been any success story that stands out for you?
Yeah, we have, the strength and the courage of the folks who come to be a part of MAD. And many times it's not because they want services from us. It's because they want to help spread the message about impairment, about the risks, and they share their story. So we have, you know, I'm thinking of one young lady we work with at West who was at 19. Her and her mother were in a severe accident. Her mother was not given much of a chance to live, actually lost most of her bowel, couldn't eat for a year, in and out of the hospital. And the younger woman was severely injured, had so many broken bones, but most of her injuries were on the lower half of her body. And 4 years later, she still lives with constant pain and probably at some point will have to decide, because her ankle was so badly shattered that it really hasn't recovered, and she's still facing the decision whether or not she'll have to have her part of her leg removed. But she has stepped up with their local chapter and both nationally and shared her story. She's come to our conference and spoken in front of the group to give other people hope. She's just really been an inspiration, and she's only 23, but has really dedicated a large part of her life to helping others and raising awareness and showing people that there are incredible challenges that come with injuries, but that there's also hope to lead a positive and happy life.
So if you could send any message to the community about the need to stop impaired driving and the results it can lead to, what would you say?
I would just ask people to not do it. That's a simple message, but you know, whether it's alcohol or drugs, you know, we're seeing huge numbers of people who are driving with marijuana, and we're seeing that in the statistics around fatalities and crashes, that it's just not worth it. It's really not worth it to the risk to yourself, to the people in your car, or to others. Plan ahead, you know, that whether that's staying over at someone's house or having a designated driver, using cabs or Ubers or public transportation, whatever options are available to you. But just think about what it would be like if you woke up tomorrow and you didn't have the use of all of your limbs, or you no longer had sight, or you had a brain injury, or you lost, you know, someone in your car was killed because of your decisions. There's no good time you know, no night out with friends that's worth the kind of impact you can have on your own life or on somebody else. So we would just ask people to think and be responsible, drink responsibly, and plan ahead.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Thank you.
Of course. Impaired or distracted driving and the disabilities caused thereby, something I take a real strong stance on. So let me preface this by asking, what in the world is worth the risk? So you go out, you have a few drinks, you celebrate with friends. That doesn't mean you have the right to disable somebody else. Doesn't mean you have the right to endanger yourself or others. One of the things I take the most issue with, texting and driving. Admittedly, that's more distracted than impaired, but the fact of the matter is, it can wait. It can always wait. Texting somebody that you're on your way. You'll still be on your way in 5 minutes when you can pull over safely. It is just not worth the risk. Texting and driving is actually rivaling alcohol and driving. Fact is, it's creating injuries. It's costing lives. It's just not worth it. Just ask ourselves the question, is letting somebody know that going to be at some party later on worth costing somebody their ability to walk or to breathe normally, to endanger their future, and not only that, to cause undue hardship on them, which can be done. For a person who acquires a disability, it can be a lot more difficult to relearn the ropes. If it's something that can be avoided, that's not fair to them. It's not fair to you. You see, a person who loses their legs because of somebody else's bad decision for one blink in time, just to lose a lifetime of getting out there and enjoying themselves to the fullest because somebody else decided they were going to play fast and loose by drinking and driving, texting while driving, what have you. It's not fair. It's not right. But the fact is, organizations like MAD are getting the word out. They're pointing out there are better ways. Designated drivers waiting on the text. Just being safe. It's not rocket science here, folks. It's just the right thing to do. It can, in fact, be a difficult temptation, especially among young people. We're under this misguided belief that they're immortal, on the magic force field plan, that as long as they have their phones and they're texting, nothing will hurt them. But if you do that, and you get behind the wheel, you're distracted, that magic force field isn't going to hold up, folks. For the fact of the matter is, it's life and death, a person's place in this world. There are support systems and recovery programs for people injured in accidents. But it's not right to stop somebody's life and completely alter the way they've been simply because you decide to get drunk and get behind the wheel. It's just not fair. Fact is, I think people are very, very adaptable. That even if a person is hit by a drunk driver, and they survive, and they have to adapt to the new normal. They have to learn to function as a person with a disability, my belief is, inevitably, they can do it with the right support system. However, it is not the place nor the right of anybody else to injure another in this way. Something I feel very strongly about because, well, if you play fast and loose with your own life, that's your risk. bad risk, one could argue that, but that's not the case I'm making. But if you decide to drag somebody else into it, an innocent bystander, that's not okay. You would think, with all the literature out there, all the cases of this happening, that we as a people would simply know better. Or do we have the biggest disability of all? Close-mindedness, and the lack of an understanding that we have to look out not only for ourselves, but for others. There's also the inherent risk that a drunk driver might not see that it's a blind person crossing, might hit someone who already has a disability, compound the condition. Not fair, again, not right. Wait on the text, get a designated driver, just don't drink in the first place. Your liver will thank you in the morning. How can it be that we have such wonderful support systems in place for people with disabilities, such excellent recovery programs, such excellent health care in many places, that any person with any disability, through enough effort and enough pushing, can and will find an answer, find a better alternative, find strength. And yet, we don't have the simple enlightenment not to get behind the wheel when we know we're not at our best. How can we be such a contradiction? Are we a people who are looking out for the disabled? Or are we a people who think only of our needs, our own immediacy? I'm intoxicated, but I need to get home to watch The Late Show or something. And so I'm going to take a chance with somebody else's life. It's a contradiction. Either we look out for our people and ourselves, or we don't. But truly, I like to see the best in people. I like to see the supports and the recoveries of people with disabilities. I love sharing their stories of strength and integrity. However, I hate hearing that a person's condition could have been avoided by just simple planning. Because having a disability really does change not only you. You realize the strength you have that you never otherwise would have. But in many ways, as was alluded to earlier in the show in Barry's interview, can change how you're viewed in a community context. And if it's coming from a place where disability isn't as widely understood, or it's still regarded as some sort of punishment, yeah, that's not right. Just makes things harder on the person who's already going through enough. In a sense, it is a punishment. It is a punishment for the person who was irresponsible enough and reckless enough to say, I'm going to gamble with my life and somebody else's life. And God willing, anybody under those circumstances will have to deal with the law. That won't fix the damage completely. But at least it's a form of closure. As a person with a disability myself, if I had received mine from somebody else's carelessness, I'd like to think I'd be able to forgive, recover, and live the best I can. But somebody else's carelessness doesn't necessarily lead to the ideal that the person who's been hurt will forgive, will forget. They may, depending upon their strength of character. Honestly, just don't let it get to that place. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one, folks. You've earned it. We'll see you next week.